rip, what are we ripping? I don't want to rip my ripping. Book. It's a new book.
Okay, we're in Rambam, Hilchus, Shaluchim Vishutafim, Perches, Halacha Hey, Chapter 8, Law 5. Okay, now, Ruvay, now we've been talking about this idea of giving a payment to your partner so there's no avak ribis. But there's one situation where you need not worry about avak ribis at all. You need not pay him. And you'll see why, very simply. Ruvain Shahisal Asada. Ruvain owned a field. Okay? So he's the investor. He owns the field. Vahori Shimon Lasocha. And he brings Shimon in to be a partner, as it were, to go inside. Lazara to seed it, Olanut or to plant trees. Ulahotzela Hotzas and to put investments into improving the quality of the land. And then Valimkar Aperis and to sell the fruits. And whatever is beyond the expenses, Yibarim will be between them. Now, whether will they make an agreement that they're going to split the profits equally, and that would be called an Oris Lamechza, a 50% sharecropper. It's basically a sharecropper. Or whether Ruvain is going to get more because he owns the land, and let's say he's paying a sharecropper a third or a quarter. Whether Ruvain has to make all the pays all the expenses, whether Shimon has to make all the expenses, because all this mutar, you're allowed to make this deal, and here's the point you have to put in between the lines, even if no wages are paid to the manager. You may do this, lechatchila. Why? Vein kanafak ribis. There is no dust of ribis. Why? Very simple. Because property cannot be loaned out. Meaning to say there's no place for ribis by land. Because the land always remains in the ownership of the owner of the land. It's not like a loan where a loan can be, you take the money out and you spend it. It's like a loan. You can't loan somebody your land. You can let them use the land, but it's not a loan. It can't, the only issue of ribis is paying back more on a loan. There's no idea of loan on a land. The land is always here. It'll never be lost. There's nothing to do. You can burn it. Nothing's got, the land is there. And since the land is there, there's no loan. There's no loan. There's no avak ribis. You need not worry. You need not pay him. Now, the guy may not agree unless he gets paid. But if you don't make an agreement for payment, there's no need to, as there's no ribis. Now, Vishimon Hamitapo Bavodasar says, Shimon, who is working on the field, Uba Hautsah, and dealing with the expenses, Uba Bechira Saperis, and selling the fruits, Hu Hanikra, he is called Oris, he is called a sharecropper. And that's the idea. So sharecropper is a type of partnership, but a type of partnership that does not require a payment because there's no avak ribis in sharecropping. Now, what if there is a they're contesting here? Ori Somer, the sharecropper, says, Lamechzeret, I went down to get 50%. Ubalasadam, I only brought him down to get a third. So the Rambam says what is obvious. Holchin achar minigamadini. You go after what the custom was in the country.
This is
half, third, or a quarter. Whatever the custom is. Obviously, put it in writing, it's not a problem. Vizeshatan Shlokam, if this guy makes a claim going contrary to what the custom is, Allah, Lahavi, Araya, he would have to bring a proof with witnesses or a shtar, as you just suggested. Now, Halachavav. Now you have a husband who's married to a woman, and he has the rights to work the field, get the profits from the field, and the husband decides he doesn't want to work. What's her land? It's her land. She brings the land in, Michsa Malug, let's say, and he's entitled to work the land, get the profits on the land. But the husband's a smart fellow, and he hires a sharecropper to work in the land in his stead, and he'll be sharing the profits with the sharecropper. Okay, so he doesn't want all the profits, but he doesn't want to do the work either. Well, let's see what happens now. Baal shehoirid arisin b'nichse ishto. So the husband brings sharecroppers to work on the land that belongs to his wife that the husband's entitled to profit from. And then v'gersha, and then the husband divorces the wife. Now when you divorce the wife, the land goes back to the wife. Now, what happens to the sharecropper is in the middle of his work. So it depends on two factors. Was the husband a man who was capable of working the land, and therefore the sharecropper was really benefiting the husband as opposed to the wife? Or was the husband a man who could not share cropper at all? So it makes a difference. Im haya bal habayis oris, if the bal habayis, doesn't mean he was a sharecropper. Commentaries explain, it means he knew about farming. And if the sharecropper didn't come, the husband himself could work the field. Very important. So now, so the fellow is going in the place of the husband, but really the wife can say, I didn't need the sharecropper in the land. My husband could have worked the land. So Hoyelvin, Nistalik Baal, once the husband's gone, Nistal Kohen, the sharecroppers are out of the picture because they only came in with the consent of the owner, and really they didn't really have to be there because the owner could have worked on the field. Now, of course, they're going to want some money over here. They've been working on it for 6 months, and they don't want to be, you know, thrown out like this because there was some kind of deal. The question is, what do they have? The answer is they will have the lower hand in this particular case. Vein lahem min ha'utzah, they only get out of the out-of-pocket expenses, el ashir ha'shevach u'bishvua, maximum of what the land's value has improved, and they must make an oath. In other words, no different than the husband himself. If the husband himself was working the field, what would he do? He would be able, he put in expenses for his wife, but he did not yet have the fruits, as it were. So the Gemara explains that we evaluate what's going on, and their hands are on the bottom. For example, if the expenses were greater than the improvement on the land, then he gets the lower amount, he gets how much the land is improved, and that's with an oath, swearing that he put expenses in. And if the profit is more than what his expenses were, then he gets the expenses with an oath, no different than a husband. And the woman can say, this is the reason. The fact that you went down, you really have not done me any good. Because if you had not gone down, my husband would have had to go down, and you can't be any better than what your husband is. And I don't want to have to lose any money. My husband was a guy who could work the fields. That's why I married such a guy. Right? And now, so it's for his benefit, brought you guys. And I'm not going to pay more than what I would have had to pay for my husband. And when any time a sharecropper business is dissolved like that, that's what's going to happen. But this one, it's a husband. When a husband is involved, his hand's on the lower side. Well, you divorced her, so guess what? You're gonna pay the price for that.
Right.
And now the sharecroppers are mommish in the place of the husband because the husband could have done it. On the other hand, remain a babaisaurus, but the husband's incapable. He's not a farmer. He's a banker. He doesn't know how to do this. And the wife knows such a thing. So when she married the husband, she knew that the husband would not going to take care of the field, and she herself would have to hire somebody else. So the husband just hired it for her. So now it's a question of the wife with a sharecropper, not with a husband, as it were. So now it goes a little bit different. Aldas Minigards, we go with the custom of what happens whenever you break up with a sharecropper. And that is your due. They went down to shoveling cars, and they are evaluated as a proper sharecropper, not as a husband. And when a sharecropper, when the business goes dissolved, the sharecropper has the higher hand. And if he spent more expenses than the profit, he gets the expenses he put in. If the profit is greater than the expenses, he gets the profit, because they would then come in with permission. So in other words, when a sharecropper, a straight-off sharecropper deal, and for whatever reasons it gets dissolved, the sharecropper has the upper hand. When a husband is benefiting from the land and it gets dissolved, the husband has the lower land. Sharecroppers who are coming in strictly for the husband, they get the lower hand no better than the husband. If they came in because the husband was incapable, then they're no worse than a sharecropper and they get the higher hand. And the sharecropper should know this when they're going in, so they have an idea of what they're getting themselves into. Yes, sir.
So when they're going in, what can they do to protect themselves if they fall in the first? What can they write into?
They should say, you know what, we'd like to deal with the wife. We'd like. Why aren't you doing it? I don't want to, but you could. Nah, yeah. So we'd rather deal with the wife.
It's the wife's property.
Yeah. You guys, is this your land? Well, it's my wife's. It's your wife's. Why aren't you doing it? I don't want to. Well, you know, we'd rather deal with the wife straight. If not, you know, or maybe pay us $500 in advance, out of your pocket, just in case things go wrong. But that's got to know the laws. Okay, halacha zayin. Ha'akin o'shara yarshin shalachal kerushas marishim. Let's say brothers or other inheritors who had not yet divided up the inheritance from the one who bequeathed the whatever assets it is. So at this point, Ella Kula Mishtam Shbiach, everyone's using all the assets together. So that is by definition a partnership. Harim Kishutav Mechaldover, they are partners in all the assets they inherited. Now, let's say you have three brothers, let's say. Okay, now, Echad Minachim, so one of these three brothers, Omina Shutvur, the partners, Now, they all would be working on the land equally, profiting from the land equally, but guess what happens out of the blue? Shenafal umnas hamelech, the king goes and conscripts one of them to work for him.
Oh, boy.
And now he's not working for them, but he can make all kinds of interesting money working for the king. What happens to all the profits that this brother makes? That he is now, because he's working for the king, and not onto the land or whatever they had. So guess what? And he makes some outstanding profits over there. Guess what? Harevach, the profit that this one of the brothers makes, la'emtzik, it's thrown into the pool, and they all share the profits. Because this is like him working on their time, as it were. So they share the profits, because they're still, they didn't divide the properties yet. So everything was divided amongst them, owned equally by them. And now it's like he went and did a side job. Of course, he didn't do it on his own. But if he does a side job, everyone's entitled to profit. They're working on the thing. Well, he's entitled to his share of the profits on the assets that are there. So they're entitled to share the profits that he makes as well.
So let's ask, though, the question. He hasn't participated at all back on the Ponderosa.
Doesn't matter.
They're doing all the work. Why should he share in the profits?
Because they're sharing the profits as he's making the work for the king, and they're not doing any of the work of that either. Okay. Now, they're getting the profit from him. They didn't do anything with that. Just like he's getting from them, they do things. That's equal. All right. Now, what if Chala Achimahem? What if one of the brothers gets sick? Really sick. And he's out for a couple weeks. Vinisrape, and he has to be healed. And that is an expense. Now, you know, that's just bad luck, as they say, right?
Why my brothers keep?
Right. So, Nisrape, so the loss that you need to pay up for his doctor bills, it's a loss that everybody absorbs as well. Theory Z management. But what if he gets sick because of his own negligence? Kigon, for example, Shaholach Bashelach, he goes in the snow without a winter coat, like yesterday. Oh, Bacham, or he goes in the hot sun, Bimeachom, in the hot time, without hydrating himself properly, and he's really being foolish. Ah, Shachol, until he gets sick. Ooh, Kiyaitz, is there anything similar to that? Hareza Misrabashal, he has to pay out of his own cash because he was negligent. Okay, we move now to Perek Chi, the ninth chapter. Isn't this exciting, guys? Say yes. It's like Jeb Bush says, clap for me. Right? He talks at these places, he gives, you know, these rallies, he talks, you know, and you expect you come to that highlight and it's quiet. He says, do me a favor, clap for me.
Oh gosh,
poor old Jeb. Anyway, Hashutaf Perichi, Hashutafim. Now we're going to speak about one partner who's making claims about the honesty of the other partner. And we're going to see he's not allowed to make claims to force the partner to make oaths when we normally would not require someone to make an oath. Remember, if I make a claim against any one of you fellows, for me to extract an oath out of you, I have to say, I am sure you're ripping me off. Well, you deny it, swear to it. Now, that's because we really don't have much business with each other, and the only way I can force you to swear is if I'm sure. If I say, well, I don't know, I think you took some money from me. Well, you think that's not worth anything, you got to be sure. However, in partnerships, because since both of them, they got their hands in the casa, you know, and there's a certain trust level that everyone's given a certain, leeway. And we're not, you know, checking everything in and out. And you can just go right into the warehouse and take what you want and do what you want. We assume you're all doing it for the best of the interests of the company.
I hope so.
Since everybody else is kind of leeway, there is that, in criminal terms, that's like the opportunity, right? There's four things you need to make a guy guilty: motive, you know, and then the thing called opportunity. Maybe it's a more sophisticated word, but I think opportunity is the word. Like, did he have the? So a partner has opportunity galore, because that's what the benefits of being a partner. You think you're going to have to write requisition forms, and then you ain't no partner, you're a worker. You just, well, there's a great deal. All right, just whip, take 500 cash right out of the register, make the deal, make twice as much profit. You're going to have to ask and wait and this and that. So there's an assumption I'm trusting you. But since I'm trusting and you got the hand in the casa, then if I have doubts about you, it's not unusual for me to have a doubt about you. And I can extract an oath out of a partner even though I don't have solid proof. And that's the assumption of how partnerships work. And now we're going to give examples of this. Hashutafim, partners, kulam, all types of partners, whether it's an investment with a manager or they're both working together, or they're getting paid, or whatever, any type of partnership you can think of, varisim, or any type of sharecropping, vapatroposim, and what do we call them? Supervise. What's the word? What's a fancy word?
Guardians.
And now, I don't know why, the commentary decided today to tell us the translation word apotropos. Apotropos is a combination of two words. Peter, which is Av, and Fus, which is Ben, which is a son. Father, son. An apotropos. I don't know. It's Aramaic. Apotropos is Aramaic, but it's from Poter Ben. So it's like father, son. Treating him like, he gets to be like a father for the...
Isn't it the executive of the executor?
Executor of the state. Executor of the state. Anyway, now, this guy's the executor, but not every executor, only certain types of executors. Who? Sheminu al-Sambe, the Bezdin appointed him as an executor. Now, you got to think for a minute. Wait a minute. We're going to make him swear when people are match of the kids. Say, you know, we're not sure, but we think he may have stolen. He's got to swear. So, wait a minute. Why would anybody be an apotropos? The answer is you'd be an apotropos because if Bezdin appoints as an apotropos, Bezdin says, oh, never, we have orphans. Who are we going to pick as an apotropos? Ah, there he is. There's Mr. Greenfield. Mr. Greenfield is such an honest,
upright
man with integrity. Upright. We would want him to take care of this. And Ernest feels, wow, what kind of covet. Everybody in the whole community knows that the Bezdin thinks I'm an honest, reliable guy. And you know what? Because honest of Ernest. That great covet you get, Ernest, you're willing to hold yourself liable to make an oath if they're going to make a claim, even in a doubtful situation. It's worth it for your good name, because you see, once you do that, you know all these people are going to use you as an accountant now, Ernest,
wow,
to take care of their fines. So the Bezdin trusts Ernest, the weak can trust Ernest, and you're willing to make an oath from time to time because
that on the
of that.
Card. Bezdin,
that's
Bezdin.
Right, Bezdin approved, exactly. But if you're on the other end, let's say the card. Father who's going to die, he appoints someone as the executor, then, you know, we cannot make him make an oath, because just because the father makes executor doesn't mean the father has got the greatest of principles that we could say, oh, I'm so honored that you made me the executor. And the guy say, if I'm going to have to do this and I'm going to have to swear an oath in not your situations, forget it. Get yourself your own apotropos. So therefore, we don't make a father-appointed apotropos make oaths in doubtful situations, but a Bezdin, yes. So we're giving more examples of this. So if the Bezdin appoints someone as an apotropos over the orphans, or the wife who gets to manage the home affairs inside the house. In other words, it's the husband's stuff, but he says, my wife takes care of everything. So she has her hand all over the place. Or the father or the husband puts her to run the family business. Uben Bayis, or any householder who gets to, let's say a son or somebody who gets to have their hand in the casa as it is. So here's all cases where there's great opportunity. The assets are sitting right in front of you. Nobody's taking notes on you. And here's the point. You have opportunity for theft. And under these circumstances, there is something called a moraheter. People can rationalize to themselves and say, you know, I've done so much extra work. I put in so many hours for the family. What's the $25? You know, it's a bargain for everybody that I copped an extra $25. And the father may know he has a son like that. Anyway, kol echamel, any one of these types of involvements, nishba medivrayim, rabbinically, they can be forced to make an oath. Betana Sofek, if somebody involved in this partnership has even a doubtful claim, such as Shema Gosel Chaver B'Masamatan, maybe the person stole in the business dealings. Or Shema Lo Diktek B'Cheshmanem, or maybe wasn't careful with the final analysis of the accounting between them. Yeah. Now, usually you have to have a certainty, but no. And the question is, why did the rabbis make such an oath that you can extract an oath even if it's only a doubtful claim? So these people rationalize for themselves that whatever they take from the owner, money, royal ham, it's fitting for them to take it. Why? Because they make so much effort. I work 10 times harder than my partner, that lazy good for nothing. I'm here at 6 o'clock every morning. He stumbles in at 10 o'clock with the scent of liquor on his breath. And he takes a siesta and I'm working hard from 6 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. You know, the guy's a stumble bum. I'm going to take cream off the top, 25%. Whoa. It's very justified.
Sheesh.
Now, you can always go to him and say, you're a stumble bum. You got to shape up or we're going to break up this partnership. But you didn't. So stumble bum's not that stupid. He's going to at least extract an oath out of the fellow. So that's why they could justify it. Lefika, therefore, Tik Noam Chacham, the rabbis made a ruling, a decree, Shechayavim Shua Bataina Safik, they're obliged to make an oath even with a doubtful claim. Why? Because now if you know the guy can whip out a shvuah on you at any time, even Stumblebum can wake up in the middle of the afternoon and say, hey, I'm suspicious of the guard.
Suspicious?
I'm suspicious that he's, it's poor, it's otter, you know, he's entitled to drink. So he's suspicious of the guy, and you know, go make an oath that you didn't take any money in the last month. All right, so now you know the guy could whip that out. You're not going to rationalize to yourself. So they do all their actions with righteousness and faithfulness.
It says you have to hold a sacred article.
Of course, what? A sacred Torah? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Rabbinically. Just to make sure that they're on their toes and that they are honest. Base. But and none of these people can force and extract a doubtful claim
that
Shiach showed Hamashpio some that there has to be a certain amount of money that it's worth that you're claiming. You can't claim a nickel. You know, we're not going to start making people like it's all nickel and diming, as it were. It's got to, just like you have an idea of modib and mixus. It's not the same idea. Modib mixus is biblical, but you only can make it if, you know, you make a claim on half or whatever, on partial. So just like you have similar ideas, even though it's totally rabbinic, there's a certain minimal amount that the claim has to be on. And it has to be, what's that minimal amount? B'shtei kesef, two silver coins, which is shtei moin, which are two ma, shell kesef of silver. And the calculation, every ma is a sixth of a dinar, which are 32 prutos times two. It has to be at least a minimum of 64 prutos of a claim. And then he has a claim. Kamosh Baras will be explained. But if you're suspicious of less than 64 prutos, you cannot force him. So now, let's take this a step further now. So now that we know that partners can whip out a capricious, doubtful claim, as it were, so now what's going to happen now?
Of
at least 64 prutos. Right. So what's going to happen if one partner dies and he has children that are inheritors? Can they inherit the ability to make a claim in a doubtful situation in the place of their father? Halacha Gimel says no.
Oh no.
Mikan Horosai, the rabbis based on this say, she may sa shutaf ocher, if one of the partners dies, ein ayoresh yochalash bia shutafo shel avi betana shema, the inheritor cannot extract the partner to make an oath with a doubtful claim.
Right.
Why? Because share eini yodea, you don't even know what to suspect him for, Avi Bavadi. The father didn't certainly, but the father at least knows where his hands were. He could say, well, you know, I want you to swear that when you were dealing with so-and-so cattle for the last week, and you're all alone, that you didn't do anything there. At least he has an idea of what's going on. There's something that he could have suspicions over. Zehayersh say, Kesef, this one for the two silver coins. But they're not in that game at all, so they're not able to extract the oath. However, the Yesh Misharal, on the other hand, there's others who rule, Shemashpil Sayersh B'tanah Shema, that the inheritor may indeed make the same extract out of doubt. Ukazeh and on this, we will make a claim for the orphans. Roy Ladun is worthy to judge this way. Why? Sure, because we know differently, a Mishnah says, Shayersh Mashpina Seisha, we know that orphans may force their mother to make an oath, even though she was Shanas Apotropos Chaybala, she was made the apotropos in the lifetime of the father, where they can extract an oath, where they don't really know what it is. So since we know that they can, a woman to be an apotropos, so the same thing the Rambam says logic would apply, they can extract from the partner. Yes, sir.
The question is, let's say that this is there's three brothers, but one brother's really a lot older. So he has his son in the business because, you know, he's a little bit out of the loop. And then when it comes now to the father dies, but the son who's been in the business for, let's say, the last 5 or 10 years, he's suspicious, and he actually knows because he's been in the business. Wouldn't he be able to make a claim?
I don't understand. There's
three brothers that are partners. The father, one father's a lot older, and therefore...
Who's the other partner?
There's three brothers that are partners.
The son is it.
And there's there's a son that's been brought in because one of the brothers is a little older, so he's sending his son for the last 5 years.
Partner,
he's not an official partner, but he really knows what's going on in the business. He's taking his dad's spot for the last 5 years.
So we go with the Rambam.
Okay, we go with the Rambam anyway, so it would be for sure okay. Maybe other people would agree too. It's possible. Okay, let's do one more. Dalit, we're on a roll, guys. What if there's no witnesses that this guy is the sharecropper or the partner? But the other fellow, Elohu Modem Piazza, but he admits he is. The Omar, he says, Shutofa Riso Ben Beso Ani, Avalogos Altiklum. Here's the situation. The partner A has a claim, a doubtful claim, on partner B.
Okay.
But the truth of the matter is, there's no proof that A and B are partners. No, they didn't write any documents. There's no proofs at all. Okay? So there really is no way of knowing that Reuven and Shimon are partners. Reuven comes to court and says, I want my partner Shimon to make an oath. I'm suspicious of him. Do you have any proof? No, but we've been partners for 5 years. Do you want to prove your partners? No.
Nope.
But I know he's my partner. So then he turned to Shimon and says, Shimon, are you partners with him?
Yep.
Now, here's the question. Can we force Shimon to make an oath? Because on the other hand, Shimon has a migu.
Yeah.
What's the migu?
He didn't have to admit he was a partner.
He could have said, I'm not a partner. And usually you think a migu might help. We're going to say migu is not going to help. That's what's going to say. Even though there's no witnesses that this fellow is the sharecropper or the partner. But he himself admits that he is. He says, I'm either a partner or a sharecropper or a family member. And he avologas altikum, but I didn't steal anything.
Nothing.
So I have amigo. No. He has to swear holding a holy object. Why? Because here's the rule, guys. Shein omri migo lepotra mishvua. We do not allow a migu to exempt you from an oath. Ela lepotra mimamam, but only to exempt you from having to pay money. That's the rule. And that's the Rima Gasha Shita. And the reason for it is very simple. The Taz explains in Choshed Mishpat. Because there is a concept of chazaka. But we don't rely on a chazaka whenever you can clarify something. Normally we say, if you're not sure, let's go with the chazaka. But if you can clarify, then we don't go with a chazaka when you can clarify. Similarly, amigo. Amigo is like a chazaka, sort of, because if I wanted to lie, I could have lied better. But we only say that if you can't clarify things. But if you can clarify, then you clarify. So if I want to take money away from you, the guy's got amigo. And there's nothing you can do. But if I could say, I want you to swear. And that swearing brings clarity to me. So I can make you make clarity even with amigo. Fine. So therefore, Elapur only takes everything from money. Now, next question, very simple. What's the definition of a ben bias? What do we call someone a householder that we assume he's got his hand in the cash box? What do you have to be to be considered a ben bias, a householder, that we would make you make an oath if we're not sure? This is the guy who can hire, he has the rights in the family to hire workers. Umotzipam are fire workers, umakasul peres, or he brings in fruits, umotzipam peres, or sells fruits. That means he has a very powerful hand in the business. Abu ben Bais, but a householder, Shana no sevedosin, he doesn't do any business. El nechsabah, he just walks in. He's the brother, he just lives in the house. He sleeps in the bedroom. He walks in and walks out, but he's got no rights to do anything. Bavad, he can't make the guy make an oath. Because since he doesn't have any liberties, he won't make any rationalizations. And we already said this. And apotropos that the father appointed him for his orphans. They can't make the executor swear in a doubt because the guy won't take it otherwise. What does he need it for? The Bezdin makes him, he gets the covet. There's no covet. V'cheinish, also a woman, sholonasis apotropos chaybel. If she was not made the executor in the lifetime of her husband, and she didn't have any business dealings when the husband died in order to bury him. Certainly ain't mashpino. So myself, you don't make her swear out of doubt because she didn't do anything, so she won't have the rationalization to steal. Or let's say she's married. But she only dealt with something after he died. The wife had nothing to do with the business. Husband died. Now someone's got to bury him. So what did she do? She went to the bank to get some money to bury him. Whoa, okay, now you've been involved. Now we can make you own. Maybe you stole.
No.
We do not extract an oath out of her who she's making use after death of the burial. Why? Because if you're going to make her make an oath, what's she going to say? He's going to say, I'm not selling anything. Look forward to take care of the burial. Go bury yourself.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to have to make an oath for this, what do I got to get involved in this? Just go rot away and let your kids deal with it. Why should I do a favor if I'm going to have to pay for that? And therefore, we do not extract an oath from her 29 minutes and 59 seconds.